Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGabinowell, and welcome to episode 55 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. Is your business on the verge of closing down? Are you having trouble keeping up with everything that's happening in your business, and do you need a transformation? In this interview, you will discover how my guest saved his digital agency that was 2 weeks away from closing down. He reveals the specific steps he took to turn around his business, how he systematized the entire business so it ran successfully without him, how he grew the business by focusing on a specific niche, and how he eventually sold it. You will also discover the 12 systems he believes every business owner should master. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document step by step how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know? Well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Jason Swink. He is a coach to agency owners, and he ran his own digital agency for 12 years until he sold the business in 2011. Our focus today will be to learn how he systematized the business and how that played a role in the eventual sale of the business. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, so before we even get started, let's share with the listeners some, you know, mind-blowing results that you were able to experience as a result of going through that process of systematizing and automating your business.
Yeah, definitely. So, I grew a multi-million dollar business. It took us 12 years, but when we started systemizing it, it really took off real quick. So we were able to grow over 13 million. We had over 100 employees. We got best place to work in Atlanta, and we beat out companies like Microsoft, to name a few. And we're constantly on the Inc. 5000 list for fastest growing company.
Awesome. And how would you say your company itself was transformed as a result of systematizing the business?
Well, it allowed me to get out of its way, as well as the employees that were not the right fit or that they weren't in the right role.
And your personal life, how was that transformed?
So it gave me a life back rather than working 24/7 or, you know, 24/8. Right. So, you know, it allowed me to do the things that, like spending time with the family, going to the racetrack, not having to work if I didn't want to, and just really be focused on the growth of the company versus just survival.
And I'm curious, at that time when the business was systematized, I'm wondering, you know, do you remember, you know, the longest time you actually were away from it?
Yes. So we were... for many, many years. I mean, literally, I jumped into this business by mistake, right? Someone asked me to design a website for them because I made a website making fun of someone. And so when I first got into business, I didn't even know what an invoice was. So I had to figure it out. So it took us a little while to figure out, you know, what business was. And then I literally remember we just kept getting client after client. We were growing really fast. But we didn't have the processes in place that were necessary to get to the next level. And I remember we had maybe 10 employees at the time and looking at the payroll, and we were literally a couple weeks away from going out of business. Wow. And, you know, I really knew that I had to put some, you know, I had to create, at the time I didn't call it systems because I'm not just talking about technology.
I would actually want to dive into that. I was just trying to give the listener some insight as to, you know, at the time when you actually systematized the business, how long, you know, you were actually away from it, you know, not having to deal with it.
So how long I could take away, like, vacation?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I always loved what I did. So, I mean, I probably could have taken a full quarter off. But,
wow,
you know, I really loved what we did. I loved the employees that we had. So probably the most time I was away was maybe 2 weeks, okay. But I could always take it longer.
And just so the listener can get some context as to what your business, what you did and kind of the size and so on and so forth, what exactly at the time did the company do, and what big pain at that time were you solving for your customers?
Yeah, so we were a digital agency. So we designed websites, we developed web applications. So everybody in the States, I assume everybody is in the States listening to this, we developed a site called LegalZoom. So we built sites like that, or built sites for like Hitachi or AT&T. So we built really big sites with systems in the back end that we actually programmed. And so the biggest challenges that they had were people had a vision of what they wanted to create, or they wanted to connect systems together and make it a very good user experience. That's what we did.
Awesome. And at the time you sold in 2011, I think you already mentioned, you said you were about 112 employees, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And can you share some insights to like maybe what annual revenues were at the time when you sold it? Just curious.
Yeah, just over $13 million.
Awesome. And so let's go back to the point where, you know, we've just kind of shared kind of the results of, you know, being able to systematize the business so the listener know what you were able to achieve at that point. But I want to take you back to before that point where the business was systematized. So take us back to when it was not systematized or automated. What was wrong with it at that point?
Well, I was a prisoner of it. I mean, that's the easiest thing. I could not leave. Or if I did leave, I would just stress so much where I would kind of regret the business, and I didn't want to show up. I mean, I literally got to a point where I was so unhappy, and probably my marriage was unhappy as well, how my wife told me this. But I remember like she was just like, why don't you just get a job somewhere else?
Wow.
And this was at a time where I was probably 6 or 7 years into this, and this is the only thing I knew. And I remember because I race cars and that kind of stuff. I remember a job coming open at NASCAR, and it was for like the CMO of NASCAR. I was like, oh, I could do that. And it literally had us filling out essays and that kind of stuff. And I was like, it was basically said, describe your perfect ideal job. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that, and it said, describe what you don't want to do. And as I was doing that, I had the aha moment saying, really, I can do this with my own company. it was almost kind of like the strategic plan of what I was trying to fill out on this resume, and I didn't submit it because I literally stopped kind of at the right before I hit submit and said, I can create this in my own company, but I just need to set up the right processes and the right systems and get the right people.
Yeah.
And then everything.
And before we
changing.
Even talk about that, I don't want us to gloss over something where you mentioned, you said your wife actually told you, why don't you go get your own job? And I want you to share with us, how did that feel? Because, you know, you think of your wife as your partner telling you that must have hurt, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, she would just go, hey, you're very miserable. So why don't you go make yourself happy? Because if you're not happy, I'm not happy. And so it really kind of took it home, you know, it hit home for me. And I was like, you know, I really need to make a change.
During the pre-interview, you mentioned how when you started the business in 1999, you didn't have clear vision. And I think earlier you were talking about that. So let's talk about that point you were making earlier.
Yeah. So many of us jump into business without knowing where they're going. They just jump into it by accident because someone asked you to do something and they were off and they were going to pay you to do it. And you're like, this is kind of cool, and you keep doing it. But at a time, and it only gets you so far. So I always look at things as there's different levels that you have to jump up, right? So there's a level of hiring the first employee. There's a level of 5 employees, 10 employees, stuff like that. And I remember like interviewing people, and people are like, well, where do you guys want to go? I'd be like, I don't know. And so I always treat things as if you don't know where to go, it's like using Google Apps or Google Maps, I mean, right?
Yeah.
It's the best tool in the world if you know where you're going. It can tell you how to get to anywhere. But if you don't know where you're going, it's the most useless tool. And so that's how I looked at what we were doing. I didn't know where I wanted to take it. I didn't have a clear vision or that clarity of, you know, what we wanted to do, what we wanted to offer. We basically told the world we were a full service agency. Mm-hmm. Well, you tell me, what does that mean? I don't know. I do everything. Anything you ever need, we'll do.
Yeah. You also mentioned that, you know, just during the pre-interview that you guys were at a point where you were, you know, 2 weeks away from shutting down the agency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because we didn't have that clear vision of where we're going. We didn't know that ideal customer and what their biggest challenges were. Yeah. We didn't have the right things in place. We had the wrong people in the wrong seats. We weren't charging enough. So there were so many different things that we were doing wrong.
So what would you say, now that you've kind of shared what was going on wrong at that time, you know, what would you say was the lowest point of the business, and describe how bad it got? And this is alluding to where you said 60% of your projects were losing money.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, we didn't have enough cash flow to make payroll. Or, you know, and you know, if we don't make payroll, we're not going to have employees. We don't have employees, we can't deliver. If we can't deliver, we can't sell. So we don't have a business. So that was the lowest point. And, you know, the 60%, losing money on 60% of the projects was just one of the things that when we started diving deep into where all the money was kind of leaking out, that we realized we weren't charging enough, so, or we didn't have the right systems in place in order to make sure we could deliver.
Do you remember when your breaking point was, when you realized that, no, things have to change, I just have to systematize and automate this business? Do you remember when specifically that was?
Yeah, looking at that bank account and going, there's no way this number matches up with what I need to clear in a couple of weeks.
Wow. So now let's talk about, you know, the very first step you took at that point when you realized this to solve the problem that you just mentioned during the lowest point.
Yeah, well, I needed to kind of paint that picture of where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. Like, I needed to start with the end in mind and have clarity in my head, right?
Yeah.
And then be able to share that with the rest of the company so they could help me get there. Because as entrepreneurs, and I didn't even call myself an entrepreneur back then, we think we can do it all. So we have that Superman syndrome, right?
Yeah.
And I realized if I was going to get out of this hole, I had a very limited time to do it. And I needed to focus on something. So I needed to focus on what I needed to create and start with the end in mind and work myself back. And then say no to everything else that won't get me closer to that goal.
You mentioned during the pre-interview that one of the first thing you did was knowing who your ideal client was.
Yep.
Talk about that.
Yeah, so that was the second thing we did. After I had that clarity of knowing where I was going, I needed to figure out, all right, who is the perfect ideal client? And it's not small business, right? My good friend Gene challenged me on this for many years. And I would say, you know, small business. He goes, small business is not a target market. And, you know, so many people go after the small business. And we were going after probably medium-sized business, but that's still not a target market. So I wanted to pick a market where I knew their biggest challenge and where they hung out. What strategic partners could I align myself with? What did they need? And so once I did that, it was able to clear my plate by half, right? So rather than going after the world, which is very overwhelming and time-consuming, I could go after Georgia. It's a little smaller, and I could be more focused.
Yeah, so you basically say you knew who the target market was. You knew how you, basically you could create a way in which you could get in front of them and basically start working on trying to convert them, since you knew exactly who they were. And so what would you say was the second thing at this point you did after you've, you know, known the vision of what you wanted to do and then determined the target market? What was the second thing you did?
Attack. You know, I had to attack that market with, you know, massive action, right? So many people just talk about strategy, but they just don't take action, right? I was 2 weeks away. I needed to go after the low-hanging fruit. I needed to go through my database of people that matched up to my ideal client. I needed to go to the events that I knew these people were. I needed to go back to my pipeline that I had and see how I could convert them and move them past and get that cash flow in.
You also mentioned about regards solving the issue of the fact that, you know, 60% of the projects were losing money. You decided to increase the charge. And how did you arrive at that result or justification for increasing, you know, what you were charging to your customers?
Yeah, well, I knew two ways to build up cash flow or make more profit. You either bring in more or you charge more. So it's really pretty easy. So I knew I wanted to bring in more, but I also wanted to do it a lot quicker. So I was like, I started looking at the results my clients were getting from what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I realized I was charging way too low. And I remember at a point, my project manager, this was after we got through that hump. This is probably a couple years later. I remember my project manager going to me and she's like, Jason, how do you sleep at night? And I was like, well, what do you mean? And she goes, you're charging over $100,000 for a website that you could make money on charging $10,000.
Wow. How did you deal with that mindset shift? Because that's something.
Yeah. So, and I went to her. I said, oh, it's very simple. This company that we're doing this website for is going to make millions and millions of dollars from this.
Yeah. That's it.
So that's really it.
Value-based pricing, I guess.
Exactly. So if you know the results that you're going to deliver, you need to charge what you're worth. If I charged $10,000, I would have lost the deal. I would have never got in the door because they would have been like, oh, no. You know, it's the same reason why people pay $300,000 for a Bentley rather than paying $80,000 for a BMW. Same company that owns all of them, probably the same platform, everything. It's just the prestige, right?
Yeah. And what are those steps did you take at this point now in the story to solve some of the problems you mentioned at the lowest point? I think one of them was mentioning how you did something with reinventing the sales process.
Yep. Yeah. So I realized, too, as I needed to make sure I was converting more. So the opportunities that presented itself to me,
yes,
I had to make sure I converted them, right? So at the time, we were converting at like 50%.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not a good number. I want a higher number. So we wanted to get it up to 75%. We were able to get it up at the highest point, 80%.
Awesome.
On average. But I realized I needed to kind of reinvent that process of, you know, from the qualification stage, right? I need to make sure I'm talking to the right person so I'm not wasting time, right? So I always use a thing called NBAT. It's called what's their need, what's their budget, are they authority, and what's the timing?
Yeah.
And so I made sure I got those four things right in the very beginning and like within the first 10 minutes. So most people will waste their time for, you know, hours and hours, sometimes weeks, and then find out some of these things don't line up. So we wanted to make sure we were talking to the right people, the budget, all that. And then I needed to make sure that I could ask the right questions and direct them to where I wanted them to go by asking questions versus telling. Like most people tell about themselves.
Yeah.
And what's the problem there? They're focused on themselves versus focused on the person that they're trying to help or sell.
Yeah.
And so that's what we changed, and we went through, you know, kind of a reinvention process there, and it made a huge difference.
Yeah. And also, how did you, you know, prioritize the other steps that you needed to take, you know, just specifically in terms of, you know, the systems, you know, just deciding what systems to, or processes to create for the business?
You know, it was really kind of by accident or just, you know, it was just do what you think could provide the most impact the quickest way. I mean, that's how we decided which ones to do, right? So, you know, automation was the last one. Because we need to, you can't automate anything unless you have the process for it that works.
Yeah.
Right. So we just looked at, well, what needs to come first? Like literally, I would just brainstorm on a whiteboard or we had a chalkboard and we just write down everything. And then I would basically create a mind map for it. And then I would kind of circle the ones that I felt the most important. And then I would look at the most important ones and go, which ones do I need to do first? So a phrase that I always tell my clients that I work with, how to remember focus. Focus is always the biggest thing. Focus to me means finish one commitment until success. And you don't move on until the next. And so many people try to do too many things. So what I did was just focus on the biggest thing that would provide the biggest impact. And then I wouldn't move on until that. So that's really how I went through it. Looking back, there's probably some things I probably would have done in a different order knowing. But at the time, it was just like I did what I needed to do to survive and get past that level.
One of the things you mentioned during the pre-interview regarding this very question was that, you know, you started thinking of your business in the sense of how do I replace myself?
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, I always owned, I mean, I was a slave to the company. I know a lot of people feel that way. I think probably every owner is that way because we basically create a business for us that employs us.
Yeah.
And then we become a slave to the business. And I didn't want to have that anymore. I wanted to be able to take off when I wanted. I wanted people to be able to make decisions without me. And so I really needed to, you know, I needed to have a life again, you know, get back to that time. Like when, you know, I went to Florida State, go Noles. And I outsourced a lot of my homework there. So they didn't even need me at this school. I mean, literally, you know, and so I wanted to get back to that time where I could do whatever I wanted. I was free.
Wow.
And so that's what I did.
And so now at this point where you're actually, you know, identifying, you know, one bottleneck in the business and, you know, trying to create systems for it and so on and so forth. You said basically focus on one commitment. What was the acronym for focus again? I just want to repeat that.
Finish one commitment until success.
Awesome. And so how exactly at that point were you actually documenting the procedures and processes they were using for your business? And if so, you know, what tools were you using at that point too? I'm curious.
Yeah, so I always used a Mac. So I just used mind mapping software like MindNode. And literally I would just kind of document like start here, if this, then this. And just literally use that. And I would send it to people. And then I used, before then, I used a Microsoft project. I think it's called Visio. I don't know if it's still around.
It's still there.
I don't use Microsoft anymore, but I used Visio. And so we would document like, all right, we have a new client comes in. This is the onboarding process. This is everything that happens.
Yeah.
They pay us a check. This happens. Project manager reaches out to them. They approve it, stuff like that. So we literally started documenting all our process that way.
At this point where you were implementing this whole change in your business, I'm curious, you know, when you were systematizing and automating the business, what books and possibly what mentors had the most influence on you at that time and why?
Yeah, so Steve Jobs was one of them. You know, it was just, and he's a big, when I heard this, everything started changing for me. So I always thought, I like to treat myself as a unique person. I never wanted to be like anybody else. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I always ran my business that way. And I said, we always have to do something. If someone's always using a wheel, we're going to do something totally different than a wheel.
Yeah.
And when I heard Steve Jobs mention a quote from Picasso and said, good artists borrow, great artists steal. And then he kind of explained it. Everything kind of changed for me. And then I started looking at what Apple did, right? They didn't invent the smartphone. They made it better. They didn't invent the tablet. They made it better. They didn't invent the iPod, the music player. They made it better, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I don't have to create something totally new. I could look at something that's okay and make it 1,000 times better. And so I started modeling other, you know, things that I would see that I would like, and I would start modeling them into my business. And, you know, it was just out of – and when I started doing that, everything just started getting a lot easier because I wasn't reinventing the wheel. I just made the wheel faster, smaller, and better.
Yeah. And so far, we've talked about, you know, what steps you actually took to kind of change around the business and get it systematized. But we'll be amiss if we don't talk about some of the challenges you had at that point and how you solved some of them while you were trying to, you know, transform the business. So what would you say was the biggest challenge at that time when you initially tried to create systems for the business, and how did you solve it?
Yeah. So as your business evolves and ours was changing, we outgrew a lot, some of the employees that we had early on.
Yeah.
So, you know, we hired the wrong people. We had the wrong people doing the wrong, you know, positions. They were doing the wrong thing. And so that was probably the most challenging because, you know, we created a very family atmosphere.
Yeah.
And when you have to let someone go because they're not right for the organization anymore, it's hard and it's challenging. But when you look at it as I'm going to lose my house, or is this person just not going to like me anymore?
Yeah.
Right? You got to kind of make those hard decisions.
I totally understand. And so what would you say was even the second biggest challenge that you also experienced at this time when you were trying to systematize the business?
Yeah, just making a decision, right? Yeah, I mean, there's no wrong decision, right? And that took me a while to realize. You know, I was so afraid of failure, going, if I pick the wrong thing, what's going to happen? I picked the wrong thing. That's about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I started looking at it like, all right, if I make a bad decision, I'm going to be smarter. If I make a good decision, I'll be happy. Right. So you look at it, happy or smarter. You want both. So make a ton of bad decisions and make that turn into good decisions. That's really it.
Yeah. And given all the challenges that you've mentioned so far, I mean, I'm just curious, why or even how did you even stay committed to the goal of systematizing your business?
Well, I felt like I didn't know anything else. I felt like if this is it, I had a one trick pony, and if the pony went down, I was doomed. Right. And so it was just out of sheer will and hunger, right? Like, you know, I never quit anything. And I always figure something out. And it was just, you know, when I did the Ironman, it helped me out with business because the Ironman was a long darn day. I mean, it was like 16 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
And I knew if I could finish that, I could do anything.
Wow.
And so I just treated that on the business.
Yeah, that's one of the things I have to add on my bucket list to do.
Do it soon.
Yeah. And also, you know, we've talked about, you know, the challenges and even talked about the steps you actually took to systematize the business. And I'm curious, at what point in time were you able to systematize the entire business? I mean, at what point in time in this story did you feel like the entire business was systematized and could actually run without you successfully? Do you remember?
Yeah. So it was probably about 2 or 3 years prior before we were able to sell the business, or when the business was sold. And it was pretty cool. I remember one night I came home and my wife was like, "What's wrong? What happened?" And I was really depressed. And I said, "Yo,
they don't need me."
They don't need me. Exactly. But here's the key is, and she goes, "Well, don't you remember a couple of years prior, you wanted to create a business that didn't need you?"
Yeah.
And you know, we all have a sense to be needed and wanted. And so I felt at the time that the business didn't need me anymore. Well, the business didn't need me for the things I used to do.
Yeah.
Right. The business needed me to pick the vision, hire the right people, coach the people directly under me, right? So the business needed me for certain things. They just didn't need me for the things that I used to have to do. And so that was probably the turning point, or that's kind of when, you know, I knew that the business would run without me.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did that, that's when we started getting inquiries to buy the company, because
wow,
someone doesn't want to buy a company that is totally tied to the entrepreneur.
The owner, yeah.
Because entrepreneurs are unemployable. No one, because people are going to come in, they're going to tell you what to do, and you're going to look at it a different way and be like, "You're an idiot. You know, it can be done something a better way."
Yeah.
And you're going to have disagreements. And a lot of people think they want to hire entrepreneurs. You want to hire people, you know, the entrepreneurs want to hire people that want to think like entrepreneurs but are not risk takers.
Yeah. And so at this point where the business now was systematized and was actually running without you, I'm just trying to give the listener kind of like some insight as to the different parts of the business and the specific system in the business that you had in place. Kind of think of it like a conveyor belt, where on one end of this conveyor belt is, you know, a potential customer of yours who probably has a problem you're solving. And then on the other end of the conveyor belt, this person has been transformed. It's actually became your customer and is out there raving and, you know, telling the whole world about you guys. I'm trying to give the listener kind of behind the scenes as to what was happening behind the scenes, making that transformation happen to that customer.
Yeah, so we were able to create a system where all the business was coming to us.
Yeah.
When they would call us, it would go to a assigned person that would qualify them. Whenever they would qualify them and get them through a certain stage and they needed help to close, I would come in. I would help. I would just assist with the sale. Then once we sold it, it would be passed to the account team. Project manager would own that and the profit. They would meet with the VP of operations that would make sure everything was going. All the delivery would go through the designers and the developers. I would not touch a single thing. I would only hear of the really good stuff or the really bad stuff, and that was fine. And then we would, you know, deliver the work, and then our account managers would go to make sure and see how we could get more work from them. And so really at the end of the day, what I needed to do was make sure the financials were right. We were making the right profit, charging enough. I'd have to coach the people directly under me, set the direction of the company. And that was really it. And it would just kind of run. And like, if I wanted to take off, as long as I set the 90-day goals for everybody, we were golden.
Awesome. You mentioned that only time they will have to bring you in is when you need to hear some of the really good stuff and some of the really bad stuff. I'm just curious, just so the listener can get some context as to that. Can you share some examples at that time of some of the really good stuff?
Yeah. So, I mean, like when, you know, one of our clients would make a couple million from a website that we designed, or their process, like, saved them millions of dollars because we were able to connect these systems and these processes together. You know, obviously they would tell us about it. And then like on the bad stuff is like, it always came down to miscommunication or they assumed something. And as those things would happen, we would look at it. Sometimes it would be our fault. Sometimes it'd be the client's fault, but we'd always get smarter and learn from it. So we would, you know, not make that same mistake later on.
Awesome. And at this point, I'm just curious as to, you know, what systems you had in place to enable the, all your employees know exactly what they needed to do. And one of the things you mentioned during the pre-interview was the quarterly coaching calls. Talk about that.
Yeah. So we always kind of, when we started getting successful, we started setting 90-day goals versus yearly goals, right? So yearly goals really suck. Because you have one chance to make them or not. And really you kind of set them and forget them versus 90 days. They come so quick, especially as we get older, right? We have kids, like time flies.
The year already flew so fast.
It's already done, right?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to create a place where we could set goals that people that were a stretch, but they could achieve them. And they had four chances throughout the year. And so what we started doing is we would say, all right, the company's 90-day goals, and this would have to match up to the longer goals that we'd have, are X. And then we would have our employees set their 90-day goals based on their contribution to the company 90-day goals.
Wow.
And so by doing this, then we could meet once a quarter. And I never liked the word, like, you know, quarterly review. That's just a negative, like, I'm going to tell you all the shitty things that you're doing. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut.
No, it's okay. It's okay. We're being real here. We're being real.
Beep, 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 beep. So we wanted to change the terminology and use coaching because that's what my job was.
Yeah.
And my job was to coach the people directly under me. Mm-hmm. Their job was to coach the people directly under them, right? And so when we started implementing that and creating a scorecard for people, you know, it just made it to a place where people got to a higher level quicker and they could make decisions on their own based on the company's direction. And so I didn't have to make all the decisions for us, where they had the total freedom in order to make the right decisions that aligned with the goals that we set.
I think you also mentioned during the pre-interview that you had a bonus structure in regards to this 90-day goal thing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, if they hit their goals, and, you know, a lot of times people, when I tell people this at first, they're like, oh, they're just going to say, keep people happy, right? I'm like, that's BS, right? You have to have goals that you hit yes or no. That's as easy as that. And so I'd have my employees and my people set their 90-day goals, come to me, present what they want, and I would say, yes, it aligns up. And then we would set based on their salaries, a certain percentage would be based on like a possible bonus.
Yeah.
And so if they hit their quarterly goals and the company hit their quarterly goals, they'd get a bonus. If the company did not hit their goals, but they did, they got zero bonus. because why should they benefit if they didn't better the company?
Yeah, because it's a team, and as a team, we all should be moving together.
That's right. Yeah. And so what you'll have is everybody start trying to help everybody out.
Yeah.
And we were able to create a cool culture. That's why we, you know, we're one of the best places to work.
I love that. That's really nice. The, you know, their goals plus the company goals must align. And if not, then they start helping each other to meet those goals, because everybody wants the bonus at the end of the day, right?
That's right.
You also mentioned – go ahead. Finish your point. Sorry.
No, go for it. I was just going to say it's all about the money, right?
You also mentioned how you guys did some coaching for those who, you know, who missed the goals, I think, so they could hit it the next time.
Yep.
Is there some insight you can share with us?
So, I mean – not everybody's going to hit their goals, right? And so this was a great coaching moment to say, you know, well, was the goal realistic?
Yeah.
Did you really do everything that you could of attaining the goal? Like, so many people, they'll come to you after they failed. They'll be like, I've tried everything. And then I'll look at them and be like, really? You tried everything? Millions of things? There's no possible way you can try everything, right? And so that's kind of a coachable moment where we're saying, well, think about why you didn't get it. And so one of the things people would always say is like, well, I don't know. And so we're programmed to always answer questions that way. It's like, I don't know. And so, and this works on your kids. So if anybody listening, you have kids, this is perfect. I do this all the time. So if my kid says, I don't know who broke that cookie jar. Well, just guess. If you had to guess who broke that cookie jar, or if you had to guess, why didn't you get your bonus? What do you think it was?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Everybody will give you a crystal specific answer after that exact phrase every time.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so at this point in the time, the business was already systematized. I'm curious, and I also know based on this, you mentioned that you had more free time. And I'm curious, at that point, what areas of the business did you focus on and why?
Yeah, so, well, you always have to focus on growth. As an owner, as a CEO, your main job is growth, both in sales as well as growth as getting your employees to the next level. So, you know, it was coaching the people directly under me to coach the people directly under them. Focused on the financials.
Yeah.
I supported the sales. And then I just set the direction and the clarity of where the company was going.
Wow.
That's really it.
And putting the story all the way to the end now is, you know, why did you sell the business? And can you even like share the story behind how the sale actually happened, if possible?
Yeah. So we started getting really specific and creating something that not many people had at the time.
Yeah.
And we were asked to speak at a Microsoft conference, and it was a really big conference. I didn't know how big of a conference it was, but I spoke right after Steve Ballmer, which would tell you how many people was there. So I was a little intimidated. But it went really well and had a lot of people and a lot of business reach out to us after. But it started positioning us as an authority, and they started looking at the clients that we had, the work we had, and all these different components working as one.
Yeah.
And then they also saw me doing other stuff that I loved and knew the business could operate without me, even though I went with the business. Oh, and just started having some people reaching out to us being like, hey, you know, I'm trying to build, you have what we don't have. So that's again about the specialization as being one of the key systems is if you're a generalist, you know, you're selling yourself short. No one's going to want you because you do everything okay. But you're a specialist, you do something unique that someone needs, they're going to pay a premium for it.
Yeah.
And so we started getting inquiries, and we kept saying no to a lot of different people. And, you know, it was a lifestyle business. I mean, we were making a lot of money, and it was having a lot of time, and I didn't know what I was going to do afterwards anyway.
Yeah.
And it was the right time, the right price. And I thought at the time that combining the two companies together, we could have built a billion-dollar company because of the strengths of what they had and what we had. But at the end of the day, they just wanted us to be the highest-paid meeting coordinator, so which happens all the time, and that's okay. But so that's why we sold.
Wow, that's awesome. I think eventually, didn't the company you sold to get bought out to? That happened,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay. Got bought out again, you know, I think 9 months later, yeah.
That's awesome. And so just so that we can summarize kind of what we kind of went through, I think you shared a 12-point system. Yeah. Can we just go through each of them quick? Do you want me to name each of them? Or?
No, I got them. I live it every day. So it's all about getting that clarity, right? Mm-hmm. That crystal clear path of where you need to go. That's step number one. Step number two is knowing what you're going to specialize in, who you're going to go after, who's your perfect client. Once you know those two things, those are the foundations. Those will allow you to attack the market, right? So, like, who do I need to go after? Where do I need to be? And then the other part is you're not always having to attack the market. You can actually attract the perfect ideal client.
Yeah.
The perfect person is. So attract is the next system. Then as you're attracting these people, we didn't really talk about this, it's about nurturing them along. Yeah. And we've created a really good system and a process where they could start from step one and go all the way to step of giving us money, right? And that's what everybody wants. And then the next system is profit. You need to make sure you're charging what, based on the results that you're delivering, charging what you're worth, charging what you can make money on. If you can't, stop doing that service and find another service that you can be profitable.
Yeah.
Then you also, as you're getting all these opportunities, you have to make sure that you're converting as much opportunities as possible, right? Most people convert at 50%. They think that's good. I like 80%. I think that's a lot better. Or 90%. If you're converting 100%, you're not charging enough.
Yeah.
And then it's all about, you know, delivery, right? How do you have that delivery system, you know, where your process, your system, your product is delivered as efficiently and effectively as possible so you can make more profit? Number nine is about partnerships, right? So many people think they have to do it themselves. Look at the right partnerships that can expedite your growth. Right. So, you know, like we aligned ourselves with, like, if we were doing it right now, I'd align myself with HubSpot.
Yeah.
If I was in the agency world or Infusionsoft or any of those. Right.
Yeah.
And then it's all about automation. Now that you have these systems going, what can you use technology for in helping you automate? You know, so many people are always doing, you know, booking appointments and they're trying to do it over email. There's great technology out there to do that. You know, how do you do marketing automation using your software that you guys do, right? How do you automate? And then it's all about the operations part, right? How do you get a foothold of the operations, right? Of like my hiring process, payroll, cash flow, all those. And then the last system that I always think every business needs, as long as the other 11, is that lead system. How do I, and I'm not talking about leads, I'm talking about leading the company.
Leadership, right?
Yeah. How do you make sure you lead your team to where you need to go? How do you coach them along? How do you, you know, incentivize them? How do you inspire them, not motivate? If you have to motivate someone, you hired the wrong person. You have to inspire them. So those are the 12 systems that I feel every business needs. And I always looked at it as, you know, I used to be a big gamer. I don't play games anymore. I like
racing. Why? I still love games.
Well, you know, like the games video I used games to play. I mean. Yeah, the video games I used to play were all racing games. Well, now I have a race car and a car that go to the track. So there's nothing like the real thing, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I do that. That gets my blood pumping. But I always looked at these systems. You need to get all of them at a certain level in order to get to the next level. So what I was trying to say before I forgot is I used to play Age of Empires, right?
Yeah.
So you have to get all these gold, you have to get all these wood and all this stuff so you can get from the Stone Age to the next age.
Yeah.
And so if you have all these 12 systems and you have these in alignment, like you get a 10 out of 10, then you can get to the next level. And then you start all over again.
That's awesome.
And you have to get those to the 10. So You know, those are kind of the 12 systems I think every business needs to master.
That's awesome. And so what would you say is the very next step that the listener who's been listening to the interview all the way to this point should take in order to get started with transforming their business so it runs successfully without their constant involvement?
Yeah, I think they need to know what they want and why they want it.
That's good.
Because, you know, I could say I want $1 billion, but if I don't have a why behind it, I'm never going to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Good. So when I decided I was going to train for an Ironman and do an Ironman, the why was I wanted to prove to myself I could do anything I set my mind to. So it was a very powerful, and you just have to take massive action. So many people just talk. Talk is cheap. Do it. Just do it.
And is there a question that you wished I asked you during this interview that I didn't ask? You know, if so, pose the question and the answer.
No, I think, man, you drilled me good enough.
That's good. That's good. And so what's the best way for the listener to connect with you and thank you for doing the interview?
Yeah, so go to jasonswank.com. Swank is spelled with an E, not like an A. Not like Hillary Swank, I'm not related. So S-W-E-N-K, so go to jasonswank.com. And all my social media stuff is out there, so hit me up on Twitter, it's Jay Swank. I give away a ton of free stuff for agency owners and service-based entrepreneurs, so check it out.
Awesome. And now I'm speaking to you, the listener. If you've enjoyed this interview, I want you to do one thing, and I want you to go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes if you have an Apple phone. And that way you can subscribe to the podcast, and every time we have a new episode, you will be made aware of it. And if you're on Android, go to sweetprocess.com/Stitcher. And if you know another entrepreneur who will find this interview useful, I want you to share with them because we want more listeners checking out listen to our podcast, growing the audience, and then we'll be more inspired to go out there and bring on entrepreneurs like Jason to come on here and share the reasons why their business will be able to transform so that it runs successfully without them. And finally, if you are at that stage in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck and you want to literally get everything out of your head so your employees know what you know and get tasks done correctly just like you would, well, sign up for a free 14-day trial. Or Sweet Process. Jason, thanks for doing the interview.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
And we're done.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.